Bring up them levels. Let's start the show.
All right.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I am Karma.
I can't hear you.
I can't hear me either.
Why can't I hear you? Is your mic on?
Yes, it is. It's on.
Can we get more levels?
I think it's because I wasn't here for the pre-show.
For the beauteous Karma. She's on four. I still can't hear you.
Talking to that thing.
Very interrupt.
That mic sucks.
Yeah, something's up with that mic.
That mic sucks. We have a spare?
No.
Okay.
We threw out the spare, because the spare was Will's.
You might want to crank the gain on her channel. All
right. Yeah, like the...
Yeah, turn the gain up. That'll hotten it up a little bit. The gain is?
Yeah.
Huh.
Am I plugged in?
Yep.
Well, let's not worry about me.
You're there. You're there.
You're there. You're
just
very,
get up on
very
the mic.
Low. Get up on the mic. Anyway.
Okay. I'm up on the mic. This phone tastes good.
All right.
Which channels out, yeah.
Channels. Well, they're doing all that technical stuff.
Yeah.
This is Ghostly Talk. We are live on Pioneer Radio from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mm-hmm.
Pioneer, of course, is pioneer.rolo, R-O-L-O, .net. We talk about all kinds of ghostly things, and then that sort of snowballed into just other stuff as well. So we've talked about Edgar Casey, we've talked about psychics, we've talked about pyramids in Egypt, we've talked about Atlantis, we've talked about just all kinds of things. Yet another...
We're going to try something new today.
...very interesting topic coming up today.
Uh-huh.
And...
You know what's kind of ironic? When people ask about the internet radio show, they're like, well, what's it about? I'm like, well, it's about ghosts and UFOs and sometimes government conspiracies yet to be, because this is somewhat of a...
Yeah,
we're going to try this,
this
show.
This will be an interesting show.
Well, the point is, we, you know, like Doug said a few minutes ago, we have kind of spread out on our topics, like over, especially over the last year. There's been a few changes here and there, and we tried new things, and come, you know, 99% of the time, we're like, wow, we're very happy with the results. And really what it comes down to is mysteries. Obviously, there is a lot of mystery around the JFK assassination. There's a lot of mystery around that. There's theories upon theories, and, you know, the majority of them are conspiracy theories at that. But there are good, sound, scientific theories that people, they have numbers to back it up. And there's also people who have been on site during this, you know, when this happened, there was people right there, such as the person that we're going to have on here tonight, Mr. Bar McClellan, who actually...
He was there.
Well, yeah, he was an advisor. He was an advisor to Lyndon B. Johnson. He was the president's support advisor, actually, during that time. And he has written a book on this, as far as the subject goes. And his theory is how LBJ was responsible for JFK's death.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, that's a tough theory.
It's a pretty strong statement.
That's a strong statement, yes.
But
that'll be interesting.
It'll be something. It's something to think about. It's something to talk about. come on, Doug.
What?
What's going on?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, I thought maybe a button might have got it.
Nope, that's all you're going to get.
That's all you get today.
That's all you get. We'll trade Mike. We'll trade Mike.
I used to bump the little button, and then you couldn't hear anybody. And I'll
push every button on the board during the break, okay?
Okay.
But right now, I have to say, our own website is ghostlytalk.com. So if you go to www.ghostlytalk.com, very active site, lots of people on there all the time. And they're reading all the stuff. I'm putting up articles. I haven't done any updates to my journal yet. I'm working on a doozy. But Scott L. has been putting up journal entries. Yes, his journal entries are pretty intense.
About what? Which one?
The dream one.
Oh, I must have been, I don't know.
I'm like, I thought mine were...
I think some evil group of hippies come in my house when I'm sleeping and, like, drop acid on my tongue. And I just see all this strange stuff. Well, no, I wanted to get that down because... we have talked about dreams on here. We have talked about that a lot. And I always said, even before you were on the show, we had a whole show on dreams, actually, God, 2 years ago. And that was the one thing I kept saying about my particular dreams is they never make any sense. But to me, at the time, they make tons of sense. For example, with that particular situation that I did document on the website, the kid's head.
Yeah, I was...
His head. All I thought in my brain at the time when the kid was trying to gnaw my hand off was that he smelled the oils and the salt on my hand. As you do know, you know, if you lick your arm or your hand, you'll like, it'll be a salty taste.
Like a dog or a cat.
Yeah.
Drawn to your hand.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. And that's what my the kid was trying to bite my hand and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, well, he smells the oils and hand, you know, oils and salts on my hand. He must, it must make him hungry, so he's trying to eat my hand.
And you were thinking this as you were doing it, right?
Yeah, that was my sense of logic while I was sleeping.
Isn't that kind of crazy how that you can think to do that in your dream?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when I wake up, though, I'm like, what the hell? That makes zero sense whatsoever.
Because that happens to me in a dream. I if somebody has passed on, I dream of them. I know that they're passed on,
uh-huh.
And I know how they died. And if they ask me, I can tell them. And it's like, that's pretty...
Yeah.
Weird or impressive that you can think to do that in your dream, you know? Because most people, when they dream, they're just kind of all over and they don't have no control over it. But it's like, it's really weird to actually have somewhat kind of control over.
Yeah. I found you.
Wow.
I found you on the board. There you go. Welcome to the show, Karma.
Thank you.
No, it is really strange. And that's why it's been a very long time. And I promised myself that. Because I haven't dreamt like that in a real long time where it was really vivid and I can remember all the details and stuff like that. So when I did, actually the funniest part about that journal entry was that I had that dream Sunday night after last week's show, right? So I came into work Monday morning, of course, to get do a lot of work, right? So my number one goal was to get this journal entry done, right? And what happened was I was actually typing the whole thing out.
I'm sorry, that's way too funny, because when you get to work, yes, I'm going to clear my inbox. No.
I'm going right to the Ghostly Talk
I'm
site.
Going right to the journal entry.
What was funny is I was actually typing that thing out inside the Ghostly Talk site, where I was actually putting it together in there.
Oh, instead of in Notepad
first. Instead of in Notepad first, or in Microsoft Word, or whatever you want to use. And what happened was I had it sitting there for so long that... I got a link from somebody else, and I clicked on the link.
And it changes the entire page.
So I went back. It was gone.
Yep.
And I literally beat on my desk. I had a whole thing done just about. So I'm like, I'm not starting this again. But I had it all, documented then, so I had the brainstems form to do it again. Basically, I just had to fill the hole again, right? So the next day I came in, and then I got it done.
Ah.
And I actually got so motivated, I made that little stupid picture, too. So that was the second part that was really strange, also. That was a scary part. And I woke up from the first part, that first sequence, whatever you want to call it, and I was scared. I was really freaked out. I mean, I was, like I said, I was kind of, laying in fetal position, and my arms were, over my, on top of each other, and I felt numb. My body felt totally numb, and I felt like I was laying there forever. I felt like I hadn't moved in, so long, and that's when I was, I kind of woke up and was just, all right, it was just a dream.
You gotta love those dreams that make you so flipped out when you wake up.
Well, the second part was even worse, though. There was dogs murdering people outside of my condo. That started to get really weird.
When was the last time you were at my house? Because you could be thinking about my dog.
Yeah. I might have been. But I just walked out. All I saw was blood. Although, up there was a stairwell.
And
I just saw blood coming out of there and all this. And then some dog owner comes and grabs his, no, bad boy, bad boy. And then walks away with the dog. And I'm like,
no murdering the neighbor.
Well, obviously, at the time, I'm like, well, he's grabbing his dog. That's fine. But I thought about when I was awake, I'm like, dude, the dog just ripped apart a little kid. What are you doing?
Bad dog.
That makes no sense at all. And then my coworker runs out and goes, Scott, don't open the door. It's my coworker, Dan, which he listens every week, actually, so I do.
Oh, hi, Dan.
Oh, he's a goofy guy. I mean, I'm like, Dan, you got in my dream, dude. Oh, cool. Sweet. So, I mean, I would suggest people, who are on the site, it's actually a cool little exercise to get into, to really sit down and just get it all down on paper or a computer screen or whatnot, and then look at it. I suggest people start doing that if you're interested in dreams and stuff like that, which I am all the time. I just don't dream enough.
I dream very, very vividly. I dream in color. And
so do I.
I dream just, it's extremely intense always.
Somebody was trying to tell me that if you dream in color, it means that you're psychotic.
That could be. Yeah.
And that is not true, because I've been to so many of these dream websites where you type in, if you dream of a tornado, you type in tornado, and it totally, breaks it apart and tells you why.
What that means.
Yeah, what it means.
What do you mean by color? Because, I dream, I know the details, what I recollect.
Well,
it's right now, what we're looking at around us right now. It's in color.
When you've seen the blood, you knew it was blood.
It was red.
Because it was red.
It was red, yeah.
Right, well, there are people who do not dream in color.
Yeah.
Okay.
They dream in black and white.
Well, there's the other thing is impressions, too. That's the one thing I started noticing with this particular set of dreams was impressions. Like, for example, like I put in there, I walked up to a house, and the house obviously was an older house, but I got the sense that it was in my parents' old neighborhood that they grew up in. I didn't have anything really in front of me to verify that, but I just felt like this house belonged in this where my parents grew up in, like mm-hmm. the area they grew up in. It just felt like that. Like also the two men that I come across inside the house, the one guy with the longer hair with the gray patchiness, and the other guy who's real pale with the balding head. I had a sense that guy was more closely tied to the little boy in the living room than the guy with the long hair. There were things I could not really verify.
But you knew these things.
But I knew these things.
Yes, that happens.
That don't make a whole lot of sense. You know what I mean? Right now it don't, because I can't verify it, but I don't know.
And I wanted to comment on what you said about how important it is, or how people should write down their dreams. I do write down my dreams, especially the ones that are like really crazy, and I think that have some kind of meaning to it, because it has happened so many times where I think it's deja vu, but I can like pinpoint when I dreamt it and it comes true. So now if I think something's deja vu, I just flip back through my dream log and then I can say right there, that's what it was and that's when I dreamt it. Usually I tell people about my mm-hmm. dreams and I forget about them sometimes
right.
before I used to log them. And people will come up to me, you remember what you said about the dream? Did you listen to the news today? I'm like, yeah, it was about the, I'm hitting him.
Crap out of each other.
It must have been me, yeah.
It had something to do with how the space shuttle,
mm-hmm.
how it exploded over
yeah.
Texas.
Yeah.
I dreamt that. I didn't dream that exact same thing, but when I woke up, I pieced it together and I told my old roommate, I said, something is going to blow up above Texas, and on the map, it ended in OSA. I don't remember what it was or whatever. 2 weeks later, he's watching the news, and I wake up, and I come down, he's like, Christy, remember when you told me about that thing that blew up over Texas? It went off, it blew up, and it was something OSA? Well, the space shuttle blew up, and pieces are landing in Mendoza, Texas, wasn't it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm like, oh my God, I had totally forgot about it until he said, you dreamt that. I'm like, holy crap, you know, and I pieced it together.
Right. You should write these down or journal entry them so that they're date and time stamped.
Yeah, I'm starting to do that.
Because even if you journal entry in private,
they're still going to have the same info on them.
Yeah, it'll still be time stamped. So if you journal entry them and mark it as private in the journal online,
yeah, people won't see it.
The only way that people see it is if you go in and make it public. You uncheck the private entry.
Ah, and they'll see the date when I did it.
And they'll see the date you did it.
Ah,
yeah.
Ah, good idea.
That's pretty cool.
Very good idea.
Hey, you guys. There's one other very, very exciting thing happening. We're planning our September trip.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, that sounds absolutely. Good.
Okay. Here we are. We're Ghostly Talk. We're like an internet radio show, right?
A couple of hacks in the basement.
Yeah, a bunch of hacks in the basement. We just, you know, talk about paranormal here and there.
Couple is two. A few is two. Several.
And couple makes it seem even more laid back, though. If you say few, it makes it kind of
attention. Couple makes it sound like a love thing.
But we're obviously interested in the paranormal, and otherwise we wouldn't talk about it for 2 hours a week every week. And so what we're going to do is we had a remarkably successful previous weekend. Remember when we went to the Terre Haute area? Well, we went more like to Brazil, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
And, yes, you remember that. You didn't go.
I stayed on the port.
Oh, wimp. but that was a marvelous, I think it was a marvelous success.
We got a lot done.
We got to meet Scott K. We got those two Scott K. recorded those two incredible EVPs.
Yeah, still stripping though, sorry.
They're just incredible, and they're eerie, mm-hmm. and they frighten me. But anyway, these EVPs, and so we of course knew that we were going to go away. We thought we would be going away to England, this week,
mm-hmm.
or next week? We would be in England. 2 weeks from now,
mm-hmm.
we thought we were going to go to England.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sort of fell through, right? That didn't happen. So what we did is we moved our vacation, you know, down a couple weeks in the calendar so that...
And kept it in the country.
We kept it in the country. We're staying in the country. We can now officially announce because everybody now got their everybody got their receipts back and everything. So we can officially announce that we are going to be at Mansfield at the Ohio State Reformatory on the night of September 10th. The event is sold out now.
I think I got the last
one. I think you probably got the last one. The event is sold out. There's no more ghost hunts at OSR in October, but there are two in November. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be at the ones in November, but, of course, those ghost hunts are definitely worth it.
Yeah.
So we're going to be there at the last one in, you know, in September. So September 10th, we're going to be at Ohio State Reformatory.
Yeah.
And OSR Gary's in the chat room if you want to talk to him about OSR and how cool it is. You can go to ghostlytalk.com and click on the chat link, or go to pioneer.rolo.net, click on the text chat link on the control button thing, and Gary's in there. He's at OSR, or he goes to OSR. He's a guide and everything, and he's basically an expert.
He is an expert.
And hopefully he'll be there on September 10th as well. We're going to be there September 10th.
He has to be there.
I hope so.
He has to be there.
Then on, and that's the last one, you know, before the October season, which, of course,
Halloween.
It changes. OSR turns into, like, a commercial haunted house.
Well, that's what you have to watch out for when you walk around there sometimes. They have props on Halloween.
So you turn your flashlight
on. And I nearly dropped dead right on the floor one time. So I come around a corner, and there was, like, this little zombie kid standing. I'm like, ah! And I freaked out. We have pictures with it.
Yes, we took pictures with it.
Because it scared the crap out of me. I was just sitting there out of nowhere. I'm like, this isn't safe, man. You can't do this.
But it was, OSR is so worth it, I'm telling you.
When you said scared the crap out of you, I was going to bring something up, but it would totally change the subject, and I'm not going to do it.
Okay, let's talk about that next. Because then after OSR, we're going to come back up here to Utica, Michigan, to the Octagon House. They're having a thing, and then we're gonna hang out at the Octagon House one night, and then we're gonna go to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
So all you folks out around in and about Gettysburg, we are going to be in the area. Email us if you've got cool places, cool stories, things you want us to check out. We're gonna try and go on some of them ghost walk things.
Or if you just want us to stay at your house.
Or if you want to stay at your house. Hey, we'll do that, too. Yeah. And then, so anybody in the Gettysburg...
We're only accepting submissions with people who have jacuzzis in their house.
I was going
to
say pools.
We need pools.
Jacuzzis. Jacuzzis.
Heat it.
Personal masseuse.
Yeah.
You know, all
so,
that good stuff.
So we're going to... Wait, we've got one. Mm. Yeah. The...
yeah, why are you going to...
I always forget that.
Hey, she needs a massage occasionally, too.
But you
She's
wine
a hard
guy.
Worker.
When you get a massage.
Keep going, Doug.
And then, so we're going to go to Gettysburg. Afterwards, we're going to go to, we're going to go check. We're just going to drive around for a while.
Yeah.
We're going to end up, because I don't want to give away the part that we're unsure of, okay? So we're not going to talk about that yet. But I do.
What if somebody wants to assassinate us? They're going to know exactly where we're at.
Well, yeah, they're going to be able to do that because we are going to go to Saturday the 18th.
Yeah.
Saturday, September 18th in Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Yeah.
We are going to be at the Mothman Festival.
Yeah, we're going to meet Jeff Wamsley.
Well, hopefully we're going to meet Jeff Wamsley and
Stanton Friedman.
Stanton Friedman may be there. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be pretty cool.
What's the best part about West Virginia, though?
The best part, other than it being, like, you know, the place of the Mothman and the Mothman Festival.
No, the best part.
We're going to be on a panel.
We're going to be on a panel.
Yeah.
Dreams
gonna,
are coming true.
You're going to actually get to answer.
You're going to have, like, 14 guys in suits with glasses on.
And we're going to be forced to answer.
Yeah.
It's like truth or dare without the dare part.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to... Where were you on the night of November 13th, 1974?
I'm going
to
hand
and we're,
out
we're
like going to
have to come up with an
something.
Answer.
Well, yeah, it's going to be something different for us, and it's
right,
exciting,
honey.
Too. Because, like I said, we're going to have all these people... we're going to have a lot... There's going to be a lot of very... You know, people have been doing this for a number of years, and there's going to be us.
Well,
we have a lot of experience in this. We've done a lot of work in the paranormal field before we even started the show.
Oh, definitely.
And,
definitely.
Sure, I'm sure we have plenty of knowledge bouncing around our heads we just need to tap into again.
Well, I imagine people ask us things like, you know, well, when I go out and about in the woods, should I take a digital camera or a film camera?
And you guys
you know,
that's a matter of perspective, if you ask me. I really can't give you a definite answer on that. There's,
right,
there's some people that are against it, some people that are for it.
But there'll be
exactly
people who ask.
Would say.
Well,
and there'll be people who ask that. There'll be people who ask, you know, what's the best investigative technique, you know, roam around or sit stationary. So those are the kinds of things that we've, you know, come up against in the past, and we'll be able to, you know, speak to that. Of course, if they have any own areas of expertise, you know, your Egyptology and my Edgar Cayce and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If they're like, well, how does that fit in? You know, well, we can, I don't know, make up something.
Let's just put together a PowerPoint presentation and just knock it all out in 15 minutes.
I think that's a good idea.
Everybody shut up. Okay, here we go.
But we might be on this panel, no matter what, we are definitely going to be there.
Yeah.
Are we going to have, like, little name?
I was saying that earlier. Oh, we have our goofy names in front of us.
Like, we're going to have our goofy names on our sky.
Like on a Senate panel or whatever.
Yeah.
That would be so
cool. Have our little Ghostly
Talk
flags. Have a US one and then have a
GT flag.
GT flag.
We should just make those for a goof. That'd be funny.
And then get like a big old hammer.
Start beating it too. What are you doing?
We can take all of our microphones and like take them together so it looks like. Have you ever seen like conferences?
Oh, yeah.
Where there's like, and put like, you know, ABC.
We'll bring our own podium
NBC,
too.
CBS and a podium.
We'll steal that podium from Indiana.
That'll be cool.
And that preacher's podium.
Yeah.
We'll steal that and bring it back.
We can have Bonnie running a boom mic.
Yeah, we'll have Bonnie standing with the boom mic with a hat on, you know.
Chilling over there.
I think that we'll last about 5 minutes by doing that, I think. Well, no, I think we bring a flag. We'll bring an American flag and then a Ghostly Talk flag, and we'll just, you know, we'll make our own little Ghostly Talk flag.
Let's just have clowns come out.
How about belly dancers? That would be
belly
pretty
dancers.
Cool.
Now you're talking.
Nobody will listen to us.
Yeah, no one would listen to a word we say, so we could be wrong, and people would be like, cool.
It's a good distraction.
We could pitch it off as, like, this is something that you could bring as bait. This will lure anyone.
Do you want to hear us talk, or do you want to see the belly dancers again? It's one or the other. Hey, you know.
Make your choice.
And somebody start throwing tomatoes. Shut up.
Yeah. It'll be the first discussion panel with chicken wire up around the tables.
Yeah, it's going to be called the cage.
There's actually a festival up north somewhere where they do have that. I forgot. We actually got asked to play there, and we're like, no, we don't want to. We can't do
Red
it.
Shut?
No. It's this festival they have where it's a tomato festival.
Oh, my god!
They
gosh.
Have a whole, all day long, they have bands playing.
I've seen that.
And they throw tomatoes.
They put a fence up in front of the band, and you just throw tomatoes. So, of course, the tomato goes through the fence
and
splinters off into a million pieces.
By the time it gets you, it's tomato juice.
Yeah, and you're covered. Yeah. Which I hate tomatoes, so that's why I didn't want to play it. I'm like, I'm gonna puke, like, and be covered in tomato gunk, and I'm gonna throw up on myself at the same time. And this is just the level of skankdom on that is just too high for me. So.
Well, hopefully Point Pleasant isn't simultaneously having a tomato festival or any other kind of, you know, fruit or vegetable.
No, we're looking forward. No, in all seriousness, we're looking forward. I'm really excited about that. I think it's.
I'm so geeked to be able to, you know, meet Jeff Wamsley and take part in this thing and be there.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting that it's going to turn out that way. I'm really, really excited. So we are going to be in Point Pleasant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Saturday the 18th of September. Anybody anywhere nearby, please come on out and visit
Out, yeah. We'll be glad to hang out and talk with anybody.
Yeah, I think it's going to be totally
awesome. Love us or hate us, one of the two.
Yeah.
All the crap. Okay, you finally get to hang out. So, yeah, we're going to be doing that. And that's going to be pretty much the end of the trip, though, after that.
That's the end of the trip. Sunday, we're coming home.
That going to be like the summer blowout trip?
That's our summer blowout trip.
Like right now,
it's a week long, starting on a Friday. And then there's going to be like no sleep or rest until the following, you know, it'll be Friday, and then through the next Friday, then Saturday is the festival, and then Sunday we're driving home.
Yeah, we're coming home Sunday.
Oh, my gosh.
I, of course, will bring my video camera.
Okay.
I'm going to make my own little reality show.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Are you going to interview us separately? I just can't stand Doug anymore. I've tried
exactly
to work things out with him. And you'll have me, like, you know, like sit down the beach behind, like, you know, the sunset. Yeah, you know, I really love the guy, but I'm just tired of him. I can't take it, man.
When we were in the kitchenette, and Scott was just going on and on and on and on and on about, you know, about sugar cubes.
Yeah.
I thought I was gonna grab two knives and just poke his eyes out with them. That's the kind of thing.
Why
that will...
Why hunt for ghosts? We can make our own.
Yeah. because we're gonna be like absolutely insane.
Yeah, we're gonna
by
hate,
the end of
we'll
the
hate each other by the end of the
yeah
week, I guarantee
that'll
you
be cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so hope you enjoyed the show, but by September 18th, I think that'll be like our last. Okay, look, we've about killed each other. We can't do this anymore. We quit.
Our
Ghostly
final
talk
show.
We're
yeah
done for it. I can't take these people anymore. I can barely sit here in the same room with them right now and do this last show.
So. When I get aggravated, just to warn you guys, or whatever, I get really quiet. I just want to be by myself.
Oh, that ain't happening for that whole week.
No, I can usually. I was telling Will, I watched the History Channel on the Gettysburg, and they had the Gettysburg diaries and stuff.
Yeah.
And the house with, what was her name again, Will?
Jenny Wade.
Jenny Wade.
Yeah.
Do you know the story behind that?
Not really, no.
There was this house on Baltimore Street. I guess we're staying on by there or something on that street.
Yeah.
And it was this farmhouse was kind of like a refuge for, like,
hang on for a second,
soldiers and stuff.
Yeah. Is it down?
I want to keep
going.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So anyway, so it was like a refuge house for soldiers that were passing by, injured, whatever. Well, yeah. This lady, Jenny Wade, she was, like, cooking one morning, and a stray bullet came through the side of the house and went in the back of her and killed her.
Okay.
Instantly.
Shot her in the back?
Yeah, shot her in the back. She went kaput, down. And there's, like, a love story behind that, too, because her boyfriend was off fighting the war, and he got injured. He was in a hospital, and he had sent another soldier back because he was heading back out to Gettysburg to tell her, basically, that he wanted to get married, right?
Yeah.
And so the soldier, she died before she got the message. So it was, like, a nice little...
That's no fun.
No, it's not, but I wonder if that farmhouse is still there.
Well, you have to find out exactly where it's at, and that's what Will's for.
Well,
Will can find that fun stuff.
Yeah. Or I can help you, Will.
Karma said she'd help you, Will.
Oh, yeah.
There's another house that's a farmhouse that's on the eastern corner of the field where the big battle actually took place.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's where General Lee died at.
Okay.
And so, like, a lot of people died there. And I'm wondering if that farmhouse is still standing.
Well, there's stories about stories concerning Gettysburg, obviously, because of all the events that went down there. That's why it's going to be a great place to go to. I mean, it's a place that I've always wanted to go to as far as just the ghost hunting thing goes, because it's so active.
I want to camp there. I asked Will and Doug if they thought, you know, we could pitch a tent there, and they're like, I don't think so.
Depends on where it's at. I mean, I'm sure a lot of that land is, they're historical landmarks now, so you really just can't pitch a tent anywhere you want. And
well, it depends on what tent you're talking about.
Shut up, Will. What are you giggling about, Will? You little
pitching tent. See,
you're like a little junior high student, man.
So I must pitching be a junior high student too, because I was thinking the same thing when you said it.
Tell you what,
I'm back.
We do need to go to break, though, to get Bar on the phone.
Okay.
So while we do that, are we back up and running as far as the the good stuff goes?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so we're going to come back, though. We're going to take a quick break, get Bar on the phone.
That sounds good to me. Yeah. And meanwhile, everybody go to ghostlytalk.com or go to pioneer.rollo.net and get in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, 235. I'm sorry.
All right, we'll be right back after this.
Journalistic responsibility.
What do you mean journalistic responsibility? I talk about aliens for crying out loud.
Yeah? And what do you think aliens are?
Why talking about this kind of stuff?
Aliens'
responsibility is usually holding the truth back. I'm trying to bring it back out to people and let them see these things.
There you go.
I think we got one vote on your side, Clyde.
What are you talking about?
Well, you do. A lot of people are on my side, I think.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Just when you thought it was safe to get drunk, then say hi to your friends.
Drunken Dialing.
Drunken Dialing.
Just when you thought it was safe to make that late night booty call.
Drunken Dialing.
Drunken Dialing.
Oh. There's a kangaroo cake boxing in my body.
Oh.
www.drunkendialing.com.
Good night. Say good night, Tommy.
Well, all right.
Boy, the chat room is packed. It's like chatting room only or something. I don't know. Standing room.
Chatting room only.
There's all kinds of people in the chat rooms. Old faces, new faces. It's absolutely incredible. Ed of Magic Mind is in there. Matt Farrell of the Ghost Tracker Radio website guy. You know, that radio show's not on, but the website's still there. And Kyle of Windsor Ghost Hunters Society.
Love your country, Kyle. I was just there this weekend, and I got to say, I love your smell. I mean, wonderful country.
You drove through it. You needed it. You needed Canada.
Yeah. So there you go. I was dependent upon Canada.
So, anyway, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I am Karma.
And, of course, we've got a very special guest coming up. I'll let Scott introduce him. Before that, though, I want to say go to www.ghostlytalk.com and get in on the chat room. Look through the cool, what was the thing, the message board thing, and post some journal entries. I read every journal entry. Even if I don't post for a long time, I still read every single one. Comment in the shout box. That's what the site is there for. Oh, and read all the news. I've been posting up a few little news items here and there as well, which are really interesting. Go to pioneer.rolo.net. Pioneer.rolo.net is, of course, Pioneer Radio's home. Mm-hmm. And there's a text chat link. You can go there and join in on the chat room, which is live.
Listen to Clyde Lewis. That's our man. I love that man.
Woo.
He's on late. Zero. He's on late, but that show rules. I mean,
it rocks.
On zero.
So anyway, with that, let's get on with the show, because we're going to talk about some really cool stuff. Scott L., take it away.
Well, thank you, Pat. How was that?
I tried to bring some
thanks.
Excitement, professionalism. I don't know what it was. Right, I read it in a book.
That was good.
There we go.
Thank you, Pat.
Quit reading that book.
Quit reading that book. All right, everybody, shut up.
Just joking.
All right, be nice.
Hey, it's quiet, please, not shut up. That's kind of rude.
Everybody, please be quiet.
Okay.
Silence, please. Thank you. Barr McClellan is a respected attorney who represented President Lyndon Johnson and his interests from 1966 through 1971. He served primarily through Texas power attorney Edward Clark and Johnson business attorney Don Thomas, advising on political strategy, campaign contributions, attorney-client privilege issues, television and labor disputes. He also was also a personal attorney for Clark in seeking an assassination bonus from big oil interests in Dallas, an effort that included two major lawsuits. A practicing attorney representing many of the major energy companies in Texas and many key areas, McClellan also obtained a Supreme Court ruling to protect parklands from freeways. Other notable cases included litigation for exploding Ford Pintos, tobacco-caused cancer expenses on the health system, licensing and regulation of cell phones, union management disputes, and several business tort cases. At one time a TV narrator, he is now completing two books on his experiences while representing Johnson. Previous homes have been in Houston, Austin, and San Antonio, Texas. During his childhood, Barr lived in Maracaibo, Venezuela for 6 years, and is conversant in Spanish. So on that note, Mr. McClellan, welcome to the show.
Well, good to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, you have a new book coming out. What's the name of that book?
Well, we're coming out with a new one, and it's going to be, keep the main title, How LBJ Killed JFK. We still haven't decided on the final title, but it's going to be How America Indicted LBJ. It's really a story of what's happened since the book came out about a year ago now.
Okay.
And as there have been a lot of developments, and it tells a story of how people reacted, how new evidence has come in, how we're putting together a whole new case called an order of proof, and how Johnson's ghost is still around. Some of his powerhouse people have tried to censor.
Okay.
They brought some muscle in to muzzle the book.
Now, so this book, the new book that's coming out, is more or less part two.
It depends on a lot of things. It'll probably be next month, but it may be until November.
Okay, and so this is part two, though, kind of the original book, right? This is a follow-up to what the reaction was to your first book.
It really is, and there has been a huge reaction from good to bad. Some people say it's a Pulitzer Prize winner. The other people say we ought to burn it. So.
Well, now, in order to get an understanding, if we can get a high level on the first book, because I know I unfortunately, I haven't read it myself. I'm just curious of how LBJ killed JFK, right? That's a pretty bold statement right there.
I was going
to
say that.
That's not everybody funny. Says that, but it's an amazing thing. You go to a book signing and people buy the book because they say, I know he did it.
Okay. See, I've heard a lot of theories myself. I've heard lots of theories. I've read lots of theories. I've seen lots of theories on videos. And this is the first time I've ever really seen or heard this particular theory.
Well, it's been around for a while, but it hadn't gotten a lot of publicity. Actually, J. Evetts Haley wrote a book back in 1964, which raised a lot of questions about Johnson's participation in what happened up to the assassination and afterwards. A book came out in 91 by Craig Zerbel that said the Texas connection and laid it all out. 1998, another book came out with an eyewitness putting one of Johnson's key hitmen on the sixth floor with Oswald. So it's been around. There's been a lot of suspicion toward him. But you get on the edge of reality, maybe, where people cannot handle the idea that a president of the United States would really shoot his way into the office. That was one of the big questions I would get on radio shows, by Radio Free America, by the way. It's been hard to get on TV, but Radio Free America has come through you all. Anyway, they're trying to keep it from getting out, and it is coming out, and they can't stop it. It's been there. People know what happened, and we're just bringing it home.
Well, now you mentioned. Now I know a lot of people are going to wonder about this. You said that Johnson planted. There was another person planted with Lee Harvey Oswald on the sixth floor.
Now, yeah, that's what we really put together in the book. The first book had 68 exhibits, and they lead right up to the sixth floor with the fingerprints of this fellow named Mac Wallace.
Okay.
Put him there on the sixth floor. There's an eyewitness in an independent book that describes how Wallace was there also. And two close associates of Johnson have said that this man was there.
Okay.
Finally, we have some eyewitnesses on the scene that describe a person that looks like Mac Wallace. So, actually, I've been real comfortable that I've got a good case to take to a jury.
Okay. So basically what we're saying, though, is that there was two, according to you, there was two shooters, though. Or was there just one shooter and maybe a consultant there? I mean, I'm just trying to see what, as far as the sixth floor went, as far as that theory goes, out of the book depository, there was two shooters then, basically. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, there were two shooters there. One was Oswald. That's a strongly debated issue among a lot of researchers, but the best evidence still shows that Oswald was the most likely other shooter.
Okay.
But Wallace was there, yes.
Okay. See, one of the most compelling theories that I've heard thus far, next to this one, is that there was a gentleman, I forgot his name exactly, but he actually did a breakdown analysis on the photo of, you know, Kennedy's head when he was shot in the car. And by breaking it down, and as far as where the shots entered, or how I'll try to be as tasteful about this as possible, how the president's head exploded, he devised a theory that the actual shooter was he shot out of a sewer grate. He actually figured it out that it was down in a sewer, and there was an actual shooter shooting out. It would be shooting up as opposed to down. You follow what I'm saying?
And I'm familiar with that theory. They have looked at those sewer covering storm drain covers, really.
Yeah.
And there's no way it could have happened. I say there's no way. You have to keep an open mind to this subject. But it's unlikely, let's put it that way. The trajectory of the shot, and there was a third shooter. There was a man on the so-called grassy knoll. Actually, he was behind a barricade fence leading away from the grassy knoll. But that was where the fatal shot, the headshot you were talking about, came from.
Okay. Yeah, and I know a policeman did see someone on the grassy knoll, and when he approached the man did open his jacket, and he was FBI, they say.
Oh, he said he was Secret Service.
Secret Service, okay.
That's one of the really intriguing events in the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Joe Smith went up there and encountered this man, and he said, I'm Secret Service. So, you know, the police let him go on. They have to defer to the Secret Service.
Uh-huh.
Perfect cover, and guess where he could have gotten his credentials from? I mean, it just all points towards Johnson.
Okay, so there were two shooters then out of the book depository. That's the theory now.
Right.
Now, this is going to sound very high level, and this I apologize. I've read a couple. I read through the sample chapter you actually have on your website, but I still want to know what would be the interest for Johnson to do this. And he's a vice president. Why would he? why would he do something like this? I just want to know what the reasons would be, like the high-level reasons.
Well, the biggest reason would be that he's a complex man. That's his defense. People would say, oh, Johnson, he's very complex. You can't ever say he was doing anything bad, though. But there were three big motives, and okay. I try to cover them in the book by going into the history of Texas. It shows how Johnson was a man who grew up with killings. Murder was acceptable to him. Anything that it took to win was okay. So he had this sort of fundamental approach to anything. If he wanted something, it was okay to do whatever it took, including killing. The second big reason was he was actually president during the last 2 years of Eisenhower's reign. Not that, of course, he was in the White House, but Eisenhower would let Johnson run the country, so he was de facto president, and he liked it very much.
Okay.
As to give way to a young upstart for whom he had no respect named John Kennedy. He didn't like that at all either. The third motive, though, was very compelling, and it was decided in January of 61 during the inauguration of John Kennedy that something had to be done about a federal investigation into one of Johnson's friends, Billy Saul Estes.
Yes.
A big investigation was going on into money that had been somehow misapplied by Estes, and Wallace was there. He was told to go see this investigator, a fellow named Henry Marshall, and convince him to drop the investigation.
Uh-huh.
Wallace went to see Henry Marshall in Robertson County in Texas, near Bryan, Texas, out at his ranch. He was murdered. And that, of course, stopped the investigation for a while the federal authorities got their case back together. But it was ruled a suicide because Johnson had control through Ed Clark of the Texas legal system.
Uh-huh.
You've heard of Texas justice? I was in the middle of it. And it was whatever Clark wanted, he got away with. Interestingly, we've had a fella whose father was deeply involved in it and recently passed on, who's helping me bring out some new facts. And it just all points to a murder had been committed by Wallace, and Johnson had to avoid being indicted. So you have really three basic motives here. One is to gain power, however it has to be done. One was to enjoy power like he had been.
Mm-hmm.
Third was to keep from going to prison. I think Johnson described it. He said, when I was, acting president under Johnson, it was like being in the White House, and here, after I was vice president, it was like going to the outhouse. Then he was worried about going to the jailhouse. So those kind of motives all fit together. Thanks, God, and another interesting feature of your question was, how could a vice president do that? And I was asked that question on some radio shows. The best example we have is Aaron Burr, a vice president in American history, who was willing to kill to advance his cause and who had ambitions of setting up his own country even. He, of course, murdered Hamilton in a duel that was illegal, and it's that kind of thinking that was still around in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Aaron Burr was back in New York after they'd been through the Revolutionary War and the frontier was still pretty unsettled.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson came out of that same atmosphere, that same background in 1900.
Okay.
Back in Texas.
Well, I know the one thing that I think about is if a vice president wants to move up, so to say, and he does it in the manner that is being theorized right now. I know from what I've read, Johnson and Kennedy had a lot of the same views as far as the agenda went, as far as politics went. Now, I do understand what you're saying. He did enjoy power. He liked power. And from going from acting president, so to say, back down to vice president, that would be a bit disheartening for somebody. But isn't there a bigger picture? I mean, one of the things that I read about was that the Vietnam War was going on at the time, and Kennedy did sign a bill to basically pull all of our troops out of Vietnam.
And you're right, too. There was a much bigger picture. What I was going through was Johnson's motives, but Johnson's motives were not enough. And when he approached Clark for help, Clark had to have support from a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
So he could approach them and in some very ambiguous but very understandable terms let them know that something big was going to happen and get their support.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a matter of saying we're going to assassinate the president on November 22nd in Dallas, but it was, would you miss Kennedy? And would you support Johnson if he becomes president?
Mm-hmm.
And if I take care of it and you don't don't even know how, and you don't need to know how,
yeah,
you're going to pay me. And they agreed to that.
Mm.
The big one was Big Oil in Dallas. They did not like Kennedy at all. You touched on one very specific point, the Vietnam War, but it was a more general thing. They did not like John Kennedy's efforts to pursue peace on a number of frontiers with the during the Cold War.
Mm.
They did not like that at all, and were very vocal about it.
We know that war is a big business. In reality, war is a very money making business.
That's a big motive all the time. Yes, it is. And Big Oil had a big stake in it. They, of course, would sell a lot of oil, but they see a lot of the money that Big Oil had gained over 20 years there had gone into the military industrial complex and into heavy construction. So it was all businesses that would benefit from a war.
Mm-hmm.
Did not like the idea of peace. They were ready to fight and make some money, just like you say.
Mm-hmm. Well, did they mess up, though? I mean, because it seems like to have the theories, the conspiracy theories and stuff, lingering for so long about, you know, who shot JFK and things like that, and then the movies, and I mean, it's part of Americana now. Did they underestimate the impact of the fall of Camelot and you know, like, basically America's reaction to the assassination, and then have to cover up and backtrack and do all kinds of stuff? Was that really a mess up on their part?
It was not a perfect crime, and the original mess up was Oswald wasn't killed in the shootout. But the bigger mistake, the bigger error they made was this abiding belief by the American people. Anyone who knows the crime scene knows it was a conspiracy. They thought they put the lid on it with a Warren report. It didn't work, and it's not going to. I mean, they don't give the American people any credit, really. But we can't be fooled, and we know what happened. And I see it all the time when I'm out at book signings. You know, I mentioned earlier, people read the title, and they say, I knew it all the time. They knew what happened. We had our suspicions.
Mm.
So, yes, they did make some mistakes, and the big one was this long-term refusal to accept what was obviously a conspiracy. But they did make a lot of sound moves in terms of concealing the conspiracy before it happened, while it happened, and after it happened. They really did a good job with the cover-up, and yet you can trace throughout the cover-up the steps that were taken by them to make that cover-up work and how it had to unfold. It couldn't be kept secret.
Well, I mean, this goes all the way. This goes from the assassination itself to the post-death. I mean, after he was dead, surgery after he was death. I've read theories on this all the way down to Lee Harvey Oswald's burial. I mean, there are theories. There are theories stacked upon theories on the cover. I guess these are the layers of covering something up. You're watching the anatomy of a conspiracy right there.
Because they had to get rid of Oswald because he might, you know, what he might.
Well, he was going to talk.
Knew too
right.
much. Yeah.
He was going to talk, obviously. Now, a question I do have, Bar, Jack Ruby, obviously he is the man who shot Oswald. Everything I've read, I never got a clear indication of what he had to do with it. I mean, as far as maybe this is the situation at hand. I mean, do you have any insight into what Jack Ruby's role was with all this?
His role was to take care of Oswald.
That's all it was then.
Wasn't killed. But there's more to it, and some of it is touched on in the book when we can explore how Clark arranged for Ruby to do it. Interestingly, after the shooting of Oswald, when Ruby gets his attorney, it's a dear friend of Clark's, and Clark later writes him a letter saying, keep him quiet. Don't put on a big show.
Mm.
Can't have that. So it's this guiding hand at every step from the conspirators themselves to keep it quiet. It's Ruby was a member of the crime scene, and he was a member of the crime background, the criminal elements in Dallas.
From what I understand, he was he did own a topless bar out there. I'm sorry, what was that?
I missed you. I'm sorry.
From what I do understand, yeah, Jack Ruby, he did kind of come from that background. He did own a topless bar in Texas, and that's where I've read some things where that Oswald was seen in Jack Ruby's bar a few weeks before the assassination. So I was just, like I said, my I wanted to know what his clear, what his role was in this. And if basically what you're saying is that he was just basically hired to take care of Oswald then.
Yeah, after Oswald survived, he was arrested. You remember when they arrested him? He was trying to shoot it out, but one of the police officers managed to get his hand on the pistol.
Uh-huh.
And I think the hammer hit his thumb. It was that close. So Oswald was going to go down fighting.
Uh-huh.
And when he didn't, again, it was a perfect crime is unraveling.
Okay.
That had to be covered up.
And that was, now you're not talking about in the parking garage when Oswald was shot?
No, this was when he was arrested in the Texas Theater on that
hour after
the assassination.
Okay, so he was supposed to be taken out, though, during the assassination, though. That's what was supposed to have happened, though. So
he was supposed to shoot it out, right?
Okay, all right. So I know, excuse me, I just want to make sure I had that clear in my mind. Like I said, Jack Ruby's always been kind of a mysterious character in this thing. Now, like I was saying before also with Kennedy, just to illustrate how much, like you were saying, Doug, how much work went into covering this up.
Well, it seems like there was a heck of a lot more work going on into, like you said, these layers and layers and layers of cover-up because, you know, and Barr, I agree, there, I don't, this was by far, far from a perfect crime because of the lingeringness of these layers of, it's like peeling an onion. And it just, there's so many offshoots.
Yeah.
And I can't wrap my mind around
it. Well, another interesting fact about Jack Ruby, I mean, well, this is what I've read. And I don't want to say a fact, but when Jack Ruby was incarcerated after he murdered Oswald, one of the investigators went to the cell where he was sitting, and he's like, hey, you know what, man, this isn't good. You just shot somebody on camera. You're probably going to go down, you know. What's going on? You know, what are you feeling? He was like, he was really nervous. He's like, oh, you know, he's like, you know, you have a cigarette? The officer gave him a cigarette, left him a cigarette, and the officer did leave and come back, and he's like, oh, I just wanted to let you know that Oswald is dead. Oswald, you did kill Oswald, right? They didn't know he was dead at the time, I should say. You did kill Oswald. He's dead. And then he just calmed down, stopped sweating, and the officer offered him another cigarette and said, would you like another cigarette? He's like, I don't smoke. So, okay.
I'm sure it's true. What I did pick up was later, I mean, one of the most startling examples of the cover-up at work was Ruby was being given a polygraph exam.
Uh-huh.
And Earl Warren went and attended the exam.
Uh-huh.
And during the course of that, Ruby is asking to be taken out of Texas so he can tell what he knows.
Uh-huh.
Warren won't do it, and Ruby fails the exam.
Oh.
Warren says words to the effect that it's okay. We know what he did. So this cover-up, these layers, like you say, they're everywhere. And
but the ideology behind, like I was, that's what I was just talking about. That little story that really grabs me because this man's going away for the rest of his life. He's going to probably he's going to probably die for the crime he committed. At the same time, though, it seems as if the only thing he was concerned about was Oswald being dead. His own welfare meant nothing. And when he found out Oswald was dead, nothing seemed to matter then.
Yeah,
yeah, fine.
It's very interesting. Like I said, I was not familiar with that story, but it all rings true. It fits into the overall pattern here.
Well, that's the character. I hate to use character like it's a play or something like that. But Jack Ruby, I'm wondering how deep he was in, or what he was convinced of to feel that way, that only to take his own personal welfare and cast it aside. What he did by murdering Oswald, I mean, it was far from subtle. Obviously, I mean, he did it right on camera in front of about 20 or 30 people.
Like, did he really like JFK that much?
Well, no, the point is he was not going to get away with this. He was going to do it.
Well, look at their suicidal bombers now and everything now, and there's the whole, you know, kamikaze thing in Japan.
So yeah, but they die. People. They die, and that's a whole thing. We understand the ideology with that. These people, as far as what's going on right now in the world today, as far as the Muslim religion goes, if you die serving Allah, you're better off, man. You're way better off. This man got caught.
Now,
he wasn't
organized
killed.
Crime is the same methodology, the same approach. They're willing to die. And he did get the death penalty.
Yeah.
He decided on appeal, and he died soon after that. But, he was going to die, and he knew it. It was, I'd say, it was not subtle at all.
It wasn't subtle. No. It was. Let's take a quick break, Bar. Okay. And we're going to talk more about this because there's just all these. I mean, like you said, it's layered and layered and layered. It's what I wanted to get on as far as this, the assassination, the whole thing goes. This has got to be the biggest conspiracy ever.
And it all goes back up to the top too.
Oh, it does.
I mean, that's what Barr is saying. It goes right to the top. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about more about that with Barr McClellan after the break.